From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we're bringing you the highlights from our forum for Wilmington City Council candidates that we held with WECT and Port City Daily. And with me to do that is my colleague, Kelly Kinoyer. Kelly, thanks for being here.
No problem.
Okay, so first, let's say a little bit about how the Democratic and Republican slates got to where they are.
Sure. So first, the Dems. After the straw poll, which we discussed in the past, including the last Newsroom episode for the Mayoral Candidates Forum, the Dems endorsed three candidates, J.C. Lyle, Cassidy Santaguida, and Chakima Clinton-Quintana.
Right, but incumbent Democrat Clifford Barnett Sr. is still running, just not with party endorsement.
Yeah, there's been plenty of speculation about whether losing the endorsement will hurt him or whether his status as an incumbent will carry him through. But I can say it's been a little less contentious for him than the mayor's race, where Jonathan Barfield Jr. has been quite outspoken.
For sure. See our mayoral race newsroom for more on that. In any case, on the Republican side, we have three candidates, and at the time of our forum, only two were endorsed.
That's right. The GOP endorsed incumbent Luke Waddell and challenger Richard Collier. They had also endorsed political newcomer Sean Guerrero, but he dropped out of the race.
Right, and that left Republican Kelly Roberts, something of a dark horse candidate, who ran most of the race without an endorsement, although just last week, the party finally gave him their stamp of approval.
That's right. So, when we held our forum, we had seven candidates, four Democrats, three with party endorsements, and three Republicans, two with party endorsements.
So, that's the panel of candidates. Now, let's get to the questions.
So, our first question was about affordability for local residents. We've asked this question in every forum for the past 5 years, and we'll continue needing to ask it in some formulation for the foreseeable future. Wilmington has become unaffordable for many of its residents, to the point where some who are born and raised here are leaving the community to find affordability elsewhere. What will you, as a member of council, do about affordability in this city?
And for this question, candidates also had some time to introduce themselves. So I want to note that some of them seemed a little nervous and then did a little vamping before they got to an actual answer. So we're trying to cut out just the meat of the responses here. So first up is Clifford Barnett.
We partner with the chamber. We partner with minority businesses. We partner with small businesses because what keeps people in cities is jobs.
So Clifford Barnett here is leaning on his experience as an existing incumbent, and he also mentioned affordable housing projects like Starway, which he voted to provide gap financing for. That apartment complex just opened with nearly 300 affordable apartments.
I'll note that Barnett also mentioned Wawa, and he specifically talked about how the company picked Wilmington. They weren't recruited. So it was kind of hard to see how the city had any role in that. I think a lot of candidates struggled in that way with economic development questions.
Our next candidate we're going to talk about is Chakima Clinton-Quintana.
If we are building apartments and mixed-use properties that we ask for in the 10, we are normally getting 10% with apartment complexes that we ask developers to give us 20% towards affordable housing.
Now, what Chakima Clinton-Quintana is talking about here is this idea that when you're doing a rezoning, when there's a master plan development, you're able to, as a city council, say you are not going to get this level of density unless you provide a certain number of affordable units. And in this case, she's talking about the city's policy of doing that for 10% of the units. She's suggesting they increase it. I think that there are economic reasons that might be tough for some developers. There's been a lot of hay made about the cost of supplies going up, the cost of development going up because of tariffs and other issues. But it is an interesting idea to bring truly affordable apartments into the city. Those other apartments might be more expensive, though.
I will say, you know, flashing back to a brighter day in development back in 2018, where developers were just going like gangbusters. There were developers who were even willing to just pay a flat fee into an affordable housing fund rather than offer affordable units because borrowing rates were lower. And I think, you know, in a future where we see those kind of conditions come back, something like this might work better.
Yeah, that's very true. I will note she also talked about supporting repairs for existing residents with things like WARM, trying to keep heirs property in the community and not getting torn down as a preventative for gentrification. We'll talk next about Richard Collier.
We need to continue working with UNCW, Cape Fear Community College, the trade school, any trade school in the near area, because we want our kids educated. We want them to be educated to go out and get jobs and then take jobs that are here in Wilmington. We want to make sure they stay here in Wilmington.
We hear this a lot, and there are really great trade programs at CFC and Brunswick Community College, and there are great programs at UNCW that lead to really good careers. but it's not entirely clear like how the city fits in there or how the city would like, you know, take credit for any work there.
I will say, in terms of things the city does have a direct effect on, he did talk about public-private partnerships, including some LIHTC projects that he really advocated for affordable housing. Those have been fairly successful. That's something that we also heard from J.C. Lyle, who's the next candidate we're going to talk about. Like Collier and Barnett, she talked about LIHTC projects, and she also was advocating for a housing trust fund at the local level. This is similar to something that exists at the state level. These are typically funds created through a public or private donation or setup to bankroll housing developments and other housing-related projects. The state has one. Charlotte has had one for 20 years that's created more than 10,000 units of affordable housing and nearly 900 shelter beds for the unhoused. So she's hoping to bring one of those here.
I'd also like to use it to land bank some land that is for sale in traditionally black neighborhoods, so we can preserve the history and for future generations. And on the Planning Commission, we walked away with a new land development code that both increased affordable housing incentives and protected the environment better. So don't tell me it can't be done together.
So Lyle did spend a lot of time on the Planning Commission, and she does know the technical ins and outs of something like a housing trust fund. I think the rubber's going to hit the road when it comes to money. So first, she's got to convince her fellow council members to put this up for a vote. But for example, Charlotte's program was funded by voter-approved bonds, and that means selling Wilmington residents on the idea.
We're going to move on to our next candidate, which is Kelly Roberts. He was a total pivot away from these pro-affordable housing candidates that we've been hearing.
The only way that we can actually solve this problem is to start building on the outside. We need to utilize the interstate that we have, Interstate I-40, I-140. There's a lot of green spaces that we can save and quit building on every piece of vegetation within the city limits.
So, to be fair, it's not that he's, you know, against people having affordable housing, but his suggestion here, a total shift to pushing housing outside of the city, which studies have shown will actually worsen traffic because you're forcing people to commute more miles, that's going to be tricky to logistically handle. And he's also pushing for more jobs here, too, and said that businesses should hire locals. And you asked him how he would do that. Here's his response.
Yeah, you can stipend these businesses to hire local.
I think he might run into some legal problems with this.
Yeah, I think with paying businesses directly, but even with tax breaks, those are usually tied to certain hiring practices that they're definitely a thing, but many of the state and federal programs are focused on employees who are like from low-income communities, or they're veterans, or they're people who face barriers to employment. And that means a lot of documentation. And so, I mean, it is an onus on some businesses. It's not as easy as just giving a company money and then they hire locals. Also, I wonder how you would handle the definition of local. I mean, does Hampstead or Leland count? How long do you have to be here before you're local? Kelly, are you a Wilmingtonian?
I've only been here for 4 years, but Kelly Roberts has also only been here for 5 years, so I'm not really sure.
All right, well, moving on to Cassidy Santaguida.
So Cassidy Santaguida was more in line with J.C. Lyle in terms of housing. She supports a housing trust fund. She suggested the city roll its existing affordable housing funding in with a grant from the endowment to create this. The endowment could obviously take some of the pressure off of taxpayers, and that would mean the fund's fate might not hinge on a ballot. And on the earnings side, she had some interesting ideas as well.
When I was at the University of Texas, I managed a workforce development program for 5 years where I helped hundreds of people begin a new career in software engineering, and I did it in a cost-neutral way. So I understand how these programs work, I understand how they can be successful, and I understand how we can transform people's lives when we give them the skills and the talent to take on the roles that are coming to town.
So depending on the scale, I think this could make a significant impact on current residents' economic agency. Whenever we recruit new employers, it usually means bringing in a lot of new employees from outside of our area. So focusing on training could actually finally get around that problem.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea for sure. Next up, we have Luke Waddell, and I would say he took kind of a moderate line. He said, not every square inch of Wilmington needs development, but it's a challenge because the land that is available is becoming really expensive because it's so limited.
City of Wilmington has, however, invested heavily. Your tax dollars, roughly $3 million a year into an affordable housing fund since 2021. Leveraging those funds into LIHTC programs that are 100% affordable housing, and then other programs that have heavy affordability metrics. We work as part of the gap financing or as part of the capital stack with a developer to produce these units.
You know, I think it's worth noting here that some local conservatives and conservatives writ large across the country have turned away from the idea of direct government funding for affordable housing, leaning into things like deregulation or other ways to sort of make affordable housing show up on the market. But Waddell is directly talking about putting taxpayer money into the capital stack, into the investment portfolio that builds, you know, apartment complexes and stuff like that. So he's definitely still on board with that idea. In fact, he's touting it as a success.
We're going to move on to our next umbrella question, which was about homelessness, specifically what else the city council could do beyond its current policies to address homelessness. We're going to start with Kelly Roberts. He talks about needing a coordinated approach and looking at financial responsibility for some of these programs. He said, quote, "We need to make sure we're getting a return on our investment."
So we need someone kind of overlooking this canopy, kind of like a manager when you start running this like a business, and make sure we're helping people, because that guy outside the door over there isn't getting help. I think we could do a better job of that.
So that idea kind of already exists. It's the Continuum of Care, or the COC. They at least coordinate some things, like coordinated entry. But they've long struggled to get all the nonprofits on board with even that. So I'm curious how the city could have enough of a stick to implement this kind of thing, especially if nonprofits aren't receiving that much funding from the city. They could bristle at being told they need oversight.
That's true, but there are some models for this. The most notable one we've written about in the past is Bergen County in New Jersey. It has a model with one government office for homelessness that brings nonprofits and government services all under one roof with, as Robert suggested, one person in charge, sort of like a homelessness czar. And they've made real strides. They've achieved what they call functional zero for chronic and veteran homelessness. That means, yeah, people do still become homeless, but in general, like, the resting rate is very, very low. I will note it's very intensive and very expensive. So it's a good model, but you'd have to put your money where your mouth is.
Let's move on to his fellow Republican, Richard Collier, who talked a lot about compassion.
We need to make sure there is public safety, but we need to have more of the social workers involved. I think now they're looking at bringing more social workers on to go out with the police department, because we don't need the police department trying to manage the social work. That is not what they need to be doing. They need the public safety side.
This is an existing program where county social workers and city police go out and answer calls. But the social workers in that program have completely full caseloads, and they're not really going on calls with the police very often anymore. So I'm curious what it looks like for the city to also bring additional social workers.
Yeah, I will also note that during the debate over Luke Waddell's anti-camping or anti-homeless ordinance, depending on who you ask about it, that also included measures to add more shelter space and bring social workers on the city's dime into the equation. So the question was, what else would you do? What new thing would you do? And I think some candidates struggled to do more than just say what's already been done.
Yes. Speaking of Mr. Waddell, we're moving on to his answer. He talked about that recent homeless camping ban that he pushed through council.
I think we needed to balance compassion with accountability. And that's exactly what the public camping ordinance set out to do.
So the original ordinance that he brought to the fore, he says that it came from the manager, but I think he kind of was championing this ordinance. Originally, it was based on the county's ordinance, which just banned camping on all property, and it was kind of a criminal penalty. It was controversial. There was a lot of debate at city council from local residents. What ended up happening is that Democrat David Joyner modified this proposal, allowed for car camping to still happen on city surface lots in favor of kind of supporting this effort in local churches. And it's no longer criminal penalties. I believe it's a civil infraction is now what it is.
Yeah.
So we're still kind of waiting to see exactly how that all shakes out. We're going to check in about 6 months on how this ordinance has changed things. But it did become a little bit more moderate, and it ended up being bipartisan.
Yeah, one thing we can say is that we have seen a lot of conversation on social media, and we've had conversations with people in person who are kind of basing, at least in part, their vote on how people came down on either side of this anti-camping ordinance. And I think that's a tough situation to be in, because obviously people are entitled to have passionate feelings about this, but we haven't really had an opportunity to see what it's going to do. I think some people might have buyer's remorse in 6 months, or maybe they'll be vindicated. We just don't know.
Speaking of these incumbents, next up we're going to have Clifford Barnett. He voted no on the ordinance, by the way. He talked a lot about what nonprofits in town and what churches can do, including the church where he works as a pastor. So here he is referencing this upcoming plan to give homeless folks a safe place to park and sleep at night.
We're one of the churches that are planning to do the parking lot where people can bring their cars, family, because those folks that are in their cars are the ones that are closest to getting back on their feet. The last thing I want us to make sure that we do is that with this ordinance that was passed on yesterday, we want to make sure that we're not criminalizing those who are less fortunate.
So, yes, he's opposed to criminalizing the homeless. He voted against this ordinance. And I will note that that bit about his church is a very personal touch on this issue.
Yeah, he really does do that work in his private life as a pastor. He also said that the city should, quote, trust service providers. And obviously, I think service providers will be happy to hear that. But I feel like there's also some frustration at the number of times and the number of years the city and county has said, oh, we need to get more information and learn about the problem. But service providers have been pretty consistently telling officials the same things for some time.
Absolutely. Coming up next, Cassidy Santaguida talking about her own personal service as a volunteer at Good Shepherd.
And I think that really helps me understand that to tackle this issue, we've really got to expand the number of emergency shelter beds that we have in the city so that we can help folks have a safe place to land when they're experiencing some of the worst times of their lives. And after that, we also need to make sure that we have enough permanent supportive housing to offer to folks so that they have a path back to safe and stable long-term housing.
I have to say, journalistically, I appreciated this answer because whether you agree with Santaguida or not, she gave two concrete policy options in 60 seconds or less and didn't fall back on like existing or past work or vague suggestions of, you know, working together.
Let's talk next about J.C. Lyle, her fellow Democrat. She talked up the city's current efforts on chronic homelessness, but she had a different area of focus.
One of my areas that I'm really laser focused on is that number of new unhoused. Every year, there's between 70% and 80% of the folks counted as unhoused are experiencing homelessness for the first time.
So her idea here is about prevention. Help people stay housed before they end up homeless. She talked about working for Warm NC, where she was executive director for 15 years, and how that nonprofit helped people keep safe, secure housing by doing repairs for low-income families. And I know she didn't get to this in her answer, but she has in the past talked about emergency support if somebody's about to lose their housing, helping them with rent, that kind of thing.
Yeah, on the one hand, we hear from so many experts that homelessness is really a housing problem. So these kind of interventions and treating this like a housing issue is a really good way to deal with the overall number of homeless people. On the other hand, for the chronically homeless who've caused some of the real friction downtown, prevention is probably in the rearview mirror at this point, and we need something a bit more extensive.
I've often heard it kind of talked about as this multifaceted approach because every individual is different and has different needs. Let's move on to Chiquima Clinton-Quintana.
I think the role of city council in addressing homelessness is that they should be a leader, an advocate, and a collaborative partner with everyone here in the city. It is not just city council's job, but it is everyone's job to address homelessness.
She said the problem isn't as bad as in bigger cities and communities, but it's also outside of downtown too. And she basically just said we need to solve this issue with collaboration. We didn't hear much in the way of specifics.
All right, let's move on to our next umbrella question. And this was about balancing green space preservation with the seemingly nonstop development that's been going on in the region. I think we can summarize some of the views here because it really was a common cause.
Yeah, we'll skip over the clips and kind of give you a rundown. Starting with Cassidy Santaguida, she talked about walking and chewing gum at the same time. Basically, that we can develop and grow as a city without just plowing down undeveloped land. That would be infill development, adaptive reuse, and trying to stick to where infrastructure already exists. As for adding new parks, she talked about collaborations with other governments.
J.C. Lyle was in a similar vein, and this is her favorite topic as a longtime member of the Wilmington Planning Commission. She talked about revising stormwater regulations to kind of incentivize redevelopment of parking lots. We hear a lot about the Kmart parking lot in sort of the middle of Wilmington. Also, getting rid of parking minimums for non-residential buildings so there aren't that kind of, quote, asphalt oceans everywhere.
I do like that description a lot. She also noted that a lot of growth outside of the city is taxing our infrastructure and that planning for that is really important. Like you were saying, traffic coming from outside of the city is putting traffic into the city, so you have to plan for it.
As you noted, Kelly Roberts was probably the most outspokenly anti-development. He says he wants to develop outwards and actually said, quote, we need to stop development within city limits. I don't know if that's legally plausible or even possible. We've seen moratoriums be really hard to impose, and even downzoning was recently outlawed at the state level. It means a city cannot say, okay, this property where you used to be able to build 100 units, now you can only do 25 or 50. So I'm curious what it would look like to actually enact any kind of policy like that, even though it does feel really popular.
Waddell, on the other hand, was just kind of focused on the green space part of this question. He said we need new parks and suggested working with the county to identify parcels, buy them, and turn them into both passive and active parks.
Chiquima Clinton-Quintana actually raised an interesting point about the cost of maintaining parks. As much as people do love parks, and creating a new one sounds great, you do need to staff them for maintenance. You know, she talked about the importance of these things as the city grows, but expressed caution about basically building stuff we can't afford to maintain.
Barnett was also pro-park and said we need to place parks in neighborhoods that are currently lacking green space. So more of an equity lens on that issue. And for development, he suggested strategic density that saves the tree canopy.
And I think that is going to be universally popular.
I think so. We'll move on to the next umbrella question and get back to hearing directly from candidates. This one is about public safety and the police department.
All right, here's candidate Luke Waddell.
I was endorsed by the Police Benevolent Association because I've consistently supported the men and women of the Wilmington Police Department, advocating for better pay, transparency in their promotional structure and the tools that they need to do their job.
So Waddell blamed increasing crime on limited staff at the police department. He commended the new police chief and says he wants to increase pay, but that will inevitably increase taxes, which he has historically really opposed. So stay tuned on that, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. All right, moving on now to JC Lyle, who talked about her work at WARM and knowing what it's like to be an employer, because as she put it, the city is first and foremost an employer.
We had really low attrition, and I'm happy to support the new police chief in efforts that are going to increase the retention tied into housing. They should be able to live here. Maybe give the retention bonuses as in forms of help with down payment assistance, things like that. We got to get creative.
So that idea has been discussed before. So kind of tying in with this idea of community policing, rather than having officers who live in Leland and then come into the community they don't live in to go to work, these are folks who live in this community and are policing this community.
Yeah, it has been a popular idea in a lot of major metro areas. Former Chief Donnie Williams actually suggested a nearly $3 million housing assistance grant request from the endowment that would have helped officers live in the neighborhoods and communities where they were going to be assigned. But from all I can tell, that grant request went nowhere. All right, moving on to Clifford Barnett.
We want to recognize that, first of all, 50% of our budget goes toward public safety, police, fire department. First things that we do is we try to make sure that they have everything that they need.
Barnett also just talked about how the climate for police has been harder in the past 5 years than it was before that. He mentioned, quote, some internal strife at the department that he thinks the new chief will help address in terms of workplace culture and environment.
Yeah, I think it will resonate well with people that candidates are acknowledging they need to do more for first responders like people in the fire department and the police department. But over the last couple of years, that hasn't quite happened. We've seen some pay increases, but there's also been calls for better benefits and pay at WPD or the in-house mental health support that the fire department wanted. So for incumbent candidates who say this is the first thing we're going to do when you've been in office for 4 years or 8 years, I don't know how convincingly that's going to land with some people.
And I'm going to point that out for Luke Waddell as well. Moving on to Richard Collier, he said he's also been endorsed by the Police Benevolent Association, like Waddell.
I'm like Mr. Barnett. I don't think it's all about salary. I do think that is a part of it, and it plays a vital role in most folks. But they need things like culture. You need things like you're respected at your job. You're respected in your community.
So overall, yes, he wants to increase salary and bonuses, but he also wants to work on the department's culture.
Yeah, from my conversations with law enforcement officers, culture is a huge deal, as is the relationship with the public and the press. So identifying that, probably a good thing for a candidate, but addressing it, that's going to take work.
Kelly Roberts talked about the need to recruit more and the challenge when Leland is paying more than Wilmington is.
These people are having to do 20 calls a day. Our citizens deserve better. The men and women in uniform deserve better. It's difficult to create a positive culture when you're doing twice the amount of work. You're working 12-hour shifts. You're forced to work overtime.
And, of course, he said we're not paying them enough. And to be frank, better pay does help with recruitment, and staffing up would take some of the pressure off of officers. In a lot of ways, this is a pretty clear and direct answer.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Chiquima Clinton-Quintana, who actually focused on empowering top administrators.
Empower our police chief to do a phenomenal job, which for what he's hired for, such as building the culture, increasing pay, and policing our neighborhoods and building those relationships with our neighborhoods as a whole, not just one side of town, but every neighborhood.
So in addition to talking about kind of an equitable policing plan, Clinton Quintana is also kind of putting it on the city manager and the police chief. And that is historically how things have worked traditionally. City council hires a police chief, but then the city manager takes over in having the oversight role of that chief. Council has taken a pretty hands-off approach in the past, sometimes to their detriment. But the question is, if things don't go well and the city manager isn't holding the police chief accountable, then what?
I think she's saying that she trusts the new city manager, and time will tell. Let's move on to fellow Democrat Cassidy Santaguida.
As it's been mentioned, the police department is currently understaffed, and so I think we need to help Chief Zudema focus on not just recruiting great new police officers, but retaining the folks that are already on the force, addressing our entry-level pay, but also making sure that we're not facing salary compression and pricing people who've been putting in good work for years into other markets.
She also talked about positive work culture being a leading indicator of retention and said Ryan Zudema is a great selection on that account because of his background.
This is a good point, and I've seen it in a few departments and offices around the region who have leaned into bonuses and benefits for new hires, and that's great, but it really does create friction with longtime employees that can accelerate burnout and eventually just erodes the institutional knowledge of that organization. And it's not just law enforcement. I mean, we've seen that with nurses and public school teachers, too.
Very interesting answers on this question. Let's move on to the individualized questions for each of these candidates. We'll start with Chiquima Clinton-Quintana. We asked her what the city should do for inclusive economic development, since that's something she champions. She talked about her own work at Channel by Live Oak and helping small business owners in the community, but she didn't specify any policies the city should enact.
The other question for her was about her take on market rate housing. She did say she was a supporter of affordable housing, but as we've reported many times in the past, housing is a complicated and bigger picture than just that, and sometimes the lack of, say, market rate or even luxury housing can cause a squeeze in other parts of the market, and that also impacts affordable housing. So your question for her was, where do you stand on market rate housing?
I don't think I've done enough research to tell you whether I would support market rate housing at this point in time.
So that was a whiff.
Yeah, kind of a whiff. I mean, at least she admitted that she didn't know an answer to the question. Moving on to Richard Collier, we asked him about his lack of political experience and how he thinks his work as an engineer prepares him for council.
He pointed to his work on the planning board and said he's a problem solver who understands the nitty-gritty of a lot of city work, like how to build roads and stormwater infrastructure.
I can bridge a lot of gaps with our internal city departments that may not be there today, or with the NCDOT, or with the MPO.
The other question for him was about tree regulations to force developers to protect more trees. Hilariously, he talked about the city tree fund building trees, which is such an engineer thing to say.
That's true. He also talked about the tree fund replacing trees with funds paid by developers and talked about an emphasis on infill development and adaptive reuse. He also mentioned building footprints, and it sounds like he'd like to see developers build up rather than out, and that will leave a lot more of the tree canopy and green space untouched.
So let's talk about Luke Waddell as well. We talked to him about whether he's talked with homeless service providers and the unhoused before he created this homelessness ordinance. And he spoke about valuing their efforts and the compassionate take they and the city have had for the homeless. But he emphasized accountability for the unhoused.
We should note that Waddell's taking credit both for the ordinance's ability to help clean up Wilmington and for sparking a debate about handling homelessness, a conversation that had kind of fallen off track. But as far as what the ordinance will actually do, again, we really just don't know.
The other question that he got was about a new effort on one of the boards he sits on at the WMPO. It's aimed at creating a tri-county transportation authority and perhaps seeking a multi-county bond for transportation projects. We're actually going to give him more time to explain this than we've given other candidates, just because we've been following this developing idea for a while, and it's time to get this information out to the public.
Ultimately, what this is would be a tri-county sales tax referendum, 1 cent sales tax referendum, as we have contemplated it currently. And those funds would be used to fund transportation projects in those three counties. It could fund the replacement of the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge in cash, no toll. I've been anti-toll, very publicly so. And so this is something that I am heavily invested in. I want to see you get across the finish line, but it's not just the bridge. We also could fund large infrastructure projects in New Hanover County, in the city of Wilmington, in Brunswick County, in Pender County. It's thinking from a regional approach in a way that I don't think we've ever done.
So this concept came up with the legislature earlier this year when they allowed Charlotte to create a similar transportation fund and seek a bond for regional transit. It was limited to just that specific project, that specific region, but this is a committee of the WMPO that is working on a strategy to seek a similar effort here in the Cape Fear region. This wasn't really considered possible before Charlotte was able to move on it, and there's a ton of moving parts because there are three counties and the entire legislature involved. But it's a really cool idea, and it could really solve a lot of problems given that NCDOT is so chronically underfunded. Waddell is currently on that board, so he's very actively involved in the planning stages for this.
All right, moving on to Kelly Roberts and another transportation issue. We asked him about intelligent traffic systems. That's something he's brought up at other events and posted about on social media. Here was his answer.
I learned that we have 252 traffic signals in the city of Wilmington. And can you guys guess how many adaptive traffic signals we have? Zero. You got it.
That's pretty good crowd work, you got to admit.
Yeah.
So he says that'll be a top priority for him to help manage the traffic problem here in Wilmington, basically changing signal times for different times of the day and being able to adapt those light timings to conditions on the road in that moment. And we confirmed his story that he had met with the city engineer. Trust but verify, you know. The city also added some context here, too. The last time the light system was updated was in 2009. It was a joint project with the NCDOT, and the next one will also probably be a joint project. Now, there is a technology upgrade on the NCDOT's next funding cycle, but there's no details on what it will include.
So, bottom line, the city will probably want to work with NCDOT for financial and logistical reasons, but it could take time, and it could limit how ambitious the city could be. They could go at it alone, but it could be trickier and more expensive. We also asked him about the support that he got from downtown businesses, and he said it's because he has the intention and capacity to help with their issues, and probably because he's a veteran.
All right, moving on to J.C. Lyle. We asked her a question that we hear from a lot of residents. How will you slow growth in Wilmington until the problems of infrastructure, affordable housing, and homelessness are addressed?
And honestly, I asked her this because I know that she doesn't believe slowing growth is the right answer to all these problems. So I wanted to see how she would respond to this really common audience question.
We've gotten behind in a lot of our infrastructure improvements, but we have a capital improvement plan. We need to make sure that is funded. I don't know that aggressively slowing growth is possible because it's America and people can continue to move here. The city council has made great decisions in the past and has made this an amazing place to live. And in my almost 30 years living here, it never occurred to me that I would be the last person that moved here. So we do need to make room and grow ethically and responsibly.
So I have to say, I have heard from liberal and conservative commentators who gave J.C. Lyle props for being honest in that moment, because a lot of people really lean into the NIMBYism, even people who have moved here quite recently. So candor and a tough question is appreciated at least by some people. I do think responsible growth as like an ethos is a good attempt to balance that NIMBYism and the constant influx of new residents. But as you and I know, pulling it off could be hard.
We also asked her about how the city can better prepare for hurricanes, and she said it's a combination of hardening homes to make them more resilient to extreme weather and making sure there's tree cover for stormwater management.
All right, moving on to Cassidy Santaguida. We asked her what she learned from running for county commissioner last year. She talked about how the city and the county have a lot of overlapping citizens and needs and desires, so she really got a good sense of what the community wants. She also said she's motivated to serve because she wants to make the community a better place for her daughter.
I think she joked that it was part of her midlife crisis. The other question that we asked her was about solutions she's seen in other cities that she'd like to bring to Wilmington. She mentioned the Affordable Housing Trust Fund again, which is a big part of her platform. And she said,
I've also been really inspired by cities that are, you know, about our size who are thinking about innovative ways to address traffic, how to bring public transportation to more people, how to think about building pedestrian and bikeways that really serve the needs of the community and understanding how people are already riding their bikes, where they're already walking, and incentivizing those kinds of behaviors in the parts of the city that need it.
Public transportation is a perennial struggle. I think more people would use it if it was providing service more often, but I also really think getting it to work will require a system that acknowledges and serves the bedroom communities in Leland and Hampstead. That means a lot more partnerships with surrounding counties. It's a good idea, but it'll take a lot of work and funding.
Yeah, I should also note that Santa Guida talked about bringing free Wi-Fi to the city.
Finally, we have Clifford Barnett. We asked him whether he would still support a housing bond. He supported it a few years ago. He said he would, and that it could fund all kinds of solutions to house those who need it and keep people housed who are facing pressure because of gentrification or the cost of upkeep.
Now, remember he said that because there are a few candidates who could end up in office and start looking at a housing trust fund, which, as we said, is a type of housing bond.
And we asked him about his record as an incumbent. He's been on the council for 8 years.
You can't do anything by yourself. One of the main things I think I like that I've accomplished is I've been able to work with every member on the council. Some of the things that I'm really proud of are the amount of money that we get for housing, the 1 cent that we put away for housing. I'm proud of the work that I do when people come to the table and they say, we want to build this. And the first question I ask is, how is it going to help with our affordability?
Okay, so we asked a lot of candidates a lot of questions, and incumbents often fall back on what they've done in the past instead of a forward-looking answer. But this is one time where reflecting on the past was totally acceptable.
Mm-hmm. And he also said he really was proud of the recent hires that they made for city manager and the police chief. So keep that in mind.
All right, Kelly. Well, thank you so much for joining me today to help unpack all of this.
No problem.
All right, well, that's just about all the time we have for today's show. And just a note, if you want to watch the forum in its entirety, including city council candidates and candidates for mayor, we'll have that on the show page. Thanks as always to our colleagues at WECT and Port City Daily for helping us put on that candidate forum. And of course, thanks to the candidates themselves for taking the time to show up, sit down, and answer some tough questions. Thanks also to WHQR Program Director Ken Campbell. And thanks to you. This show is airing during our fall pledge drive, and as we've talked about over the last couple of months, we are facing uncertain financial realities now that funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting has essentially been terminated and doesn't look like it's coming back anytime soon. The good news is this community has supported WHQR for 42 years, and we feel like we've got at least another 42 years in us, but we do need your help. So we hope you will visit whqr.org and make a pledge of support. We are 100% community funded, and we're very grateful for the community that has supported us, and we hope you'll be a part of that. Music for today's show was provided by If These Trees Could Talk and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have comments, concerns, or an idea for a future show, email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.